Thanks, Pete. Good afternoon. It's nice to have a pianist, by the way. For those of you who are visitors here, we don't normally have a summer pianist, but we have new young talent, and we have one now. It's great. I think, to me, it's one of the great mysteries of existence, of human existence, that the Creator does not show himself. The one with the power, the intelligence to create, you know, the machinery of life itself, cannot be seen by that life. You know, he gave us five senses, but he doesn't reflect any light into our eyes. We can't see him. He doesn't vibrate the air so that our ears can hear him. Doesn't emit any chemicals so we can taste or smell him. Doesn't appear in any solid form so that we can touch him. So how do you know his will? How do you know anything about God? We need a sixth sense. Have you seen the movie by that title, The Sixth Sense? Remember that? About 10 years ago, on Night Shyamalan, one of his first hits. The movie in The Sixth Sense, Bruce Willis plays this psychologist. Works with this young boy who has a sixth sense. Remember that? His sixth sense is he sees and hears dead people. It's completely fiction, completely unbiblical, of course, but that's his sixth sense. But there really is a need for a sixth sense to sense the spiritual. Do you have one? No. Do you have that sense to know about God, that you can sense God? I want to propose this afternoon that we do have that sixth sense, which is obviously sensing him via words. The written word, the spoken word, is that sense, which is pretty obvious. But I also want to contrast it with something else that appears in the Bible. I want to note that the sixth sense is not spiritual experience. The sixth sense is the words, not an experience. You know, this is a great mystery, as I started with, that God does not show himself. And I think because God does not show himself, that generally evokes two erroneous responses in people. On one hand, you have the modern response. That is modern, someone who considers himself enlightened by science, and concludes that since you cannot sense God, God doesn't exist. Pretty common among the educated. But the other, and even more modern, conclusion is the postmodern view. In postmodern America, we seek spirituality. We seek God, spirituality within ourselves. This seeking spirituality within ourselves, which is so popular, at least among the educated elite these days, is not new. It is in the Bible. When you think of spiritual experience, people wanting to experience God, experience spirituality, you probably think of what was going on in the city of, in the congregation of Corinth, do you not? Two letters to the Corinthians deal with that subject. So I'd like to turn there today and see what Paul's conclusion is about what is the true sixth sense. What is the nature of that sixth sense of sensing the spiritual? I'll start in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. First thing to note about Corinth and the letters to the Corinthians is that this idea of this competing idea of spirituality is coming from false teachers. It comes from false teachers there in Corinth. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 18 says, "First of all, when you come together in the church, I hear that there are divisions among you." You know, we're famous about knowing about the Corinthians, that is, are famous for having divisions. We know that. "So I partly believe it, Verse 19, for there must be also heresies among you. There are heresies in Corinth. There are lots of hints at the nature of that heresy in 1 Corinthians, but the fact that there are false apostles, false teachers, there is abundantly clear in the second letter, which comes right on the heels of the first letter. I'll turn over to chapter 11 of the second letter. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 4. Paul writes, if he that comes preaches another Jesus, that reminds me of the letter to the Galatians and the trouble there, whom we have not preached, or if you receive another spirit, that's a crux, which you have not received, at least not from us, or another gospel, which you have not accepted, at least it didn't come from us, you might well bear with him. Drop down to verse 13. Speaking of these preachers in Corinth, for such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers, now that's a pretty awful thing to say about somebody in the church, but there they were in Corinth preaching, and Paul is calling them Satan's ministers. There were false teachers in Corinth. If his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works. In other words, their behavior was not good. There were false teachers, and their behavior was not good. They boasted some great spiritual superiority over Paul. They had a different idea of what true spirituality is. Actually, they teach a variety of issues. Second point, then, a variety of issues. For example, just dropping, down to verse 22, they are Jewish. Strangely enough. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. They're Jewish. But not like any other Jews that, you would know of these days, nowadays. Second point, they bring Christians into some kind of bondage, he says. Verse 20, up to verse 20. You suffer or allow, if a man bring you into bondage, if a man devour you, take of you, take your money. If a man exalt himself, they're very boastful. If a man spite you on the face. But he speaks here in this verse of bondage. Some perhaps rituals or sacraments that these teachers want Christians to practice. Perhaps they've adapted some of the Old Testament rituals. They are Jewish, after all. But another thing that's strange about them, they seem to be above the law. I won't have you turn back to 1 Corinthians, but in two verses in 1 Corinthians, you can just note 1 Corinthians 6:12 and 10:23, Paul uses the phrase, all things are lawful to me, four times. In those two verses, he uses it four times. He seems to be quoting them. He seems to be quoting what they popularly say in Corinth. All things are lawful to me. Paul says, all things are lawful to me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful to me, but I will not be brought under the power of any, as these false preachers attempt to bring them into some kind of a bondage. All things are lawful to me, he says in chapter 10, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful, but all things edify not. Edify not. And that's the important thing to Paul. How are you building the church? Like Corey's sermon, how are you edifying the church? These are not. They know the Old Testament, but they do not obey it, as we just read back in chapter 11, verse 13. They're false apostles whose end shall be according to their works. Their behavior is not good, but they claim to be above the law. In chapter 15 of 1 Corinthians, we see that they do not believe in the resurrection as we know it, They believe in the immortality of the soul. 1 Corinthians 15:12. Now, if Christ be preached that he rose from the dead, how say some among you that there is no resurrection of the dead? The idea of the immortality of the soul, which was popular in the time among the Greeks and the Egyptians in the East, is fundamentally incompatible, isn't it, with a resurrection? If your soul is going to escape your body and go to heaven, what purpose would a resurrection serve? They're incompatible. And so all of chapter 15 is a rebuttal against these teachers who have some other idea about what a resurrection is and what, you know, they believe in the immortality of the soul. But the big issue amongst these teachers is spirituality. If you're in 1 Corinthians, beginning in chapter 12, he addresses the issue of their teaching about spirituality. Verse 7, 12:7. But the manifestation of the Spirit, how does the Spirit manifest itself? The manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit. To profit, not to experience or to excite, but to profit the church. And then he goes on to chapter 14 and addresses especially the concept of spirit manifestations and what is this sixth sense. How do you experience the Spirit or experience spirituality? Chapter 14, follow after charity. Desire spiritual gifts, but rather, or most of all, that you may prophesy or preach, edifying the church. For he that speaks in an unknown tongue, which is apparently being taught there in Corinth, speaks not to men, but unto God, for no man understands him. Maybe in spirit he speaks mysteries. Verse 3, but he that prophesies or preaches speaks to men to edification, which is the point of the Spirit, and exhortation and comfort. He that speaks in an unknown tongue might edify himself, Paul is allowing. And Paul is allowing that the gift of tongues happens. Of course, we know it happened in Pentecost. It was a gift of speaking real languages to preach the gospel to people who couldn't otherwise understand. So he's allowing that he that speaks in an unknown tongue edifies himself, but he that prophesies edifies the church. He's contrasting one idea of spiritual manifestation to another. Now read the whole chapter sometime when you have a few minutes and notice that Paul is speaking, not exhorting them to this kind of spirituality, but he's combating a spirituality that's being taught there in Corinth. He's working against those who teach that kind of spirituality. Verse 15. What is it then? I will pray with the Spirit, and I will pray with understanding also. That's the point. More important than experience is understanding. I will sing with the Spirit, and I will sing with understanding also. Understanding of God's words. That's the real sixth sense. The Spirit leads to understanding. That's what Paul is concluding here. The Spirit does not give spiritual experience, but spiritual understanding. Let's see elsewhere how Paul contrasts this idea of spirituality versus the Spirit bringing understanding. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, first couple of verses, 2 Corinthians 4:1. Therefore, seeing we have this ministry, Paul's apostleship, as we have received mercy, we faint not. Verse 2, but have renounced the hidden things of dishonesty from our past, not walking in craftiness, nor handling the word of God deceitfully, as some others do, handle the word of God deceitfully. Paul handles the word of God. That's his sixth sense. Everything that can be known of God is revealed by God's Spirit through God's words. Now, we see the words in print with our eyes, of course. That's the sense of sight. But we understand the words with the Spirit. Verse 3. If our gospel is hid, our gospel is hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world has blinded. Did they lose their sight? Did they lose one of their five senses? Blinded the minds of those which believe not. Everyone who has sight can read the words, but the God of this world, the God of these spiritual teachers, has blinded them spiritually. Blinded the real sixth sense, the real sensing of the Spirit, of the spiritual, the way that you can know the spiritual. Now, God's Spirit mixed with our spirit produces understanding of God's words. Now, Paul wrote to the Romans, so faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God, not by spiritual experience. It is the understanding of God's words, then, that is that sixth sense. On the opposite side, in Corinthians, we find dreams and visions, and ecstatic babblings, to be the trappings of a different spirituality, a different spirit. That spiritual experience was a counterfeit. It was taught here by the men in Corinth who the God of this world has blinded. Instead, we seek to know God and His will by His own words. And that's our spiritual sixth sense.